So I'm going to read this piece again, and then I want to just explore it a little bit with you guys. Those who greatly realize delusion are Buddhas. One, delusion is not some fixed thing within our minds that, if eliminated, will be replaced by enlightenment. The world we live in is the world we create based on how our mind encounters the myriad dharmas. We cannot prevent our minds from creating the world as it does, but it is possible to realize that the world of our creation does not reflect true reality. Practicing with this realization and letting go of rigid belief in the narratives and preferences of our minds is opening the hand of thought. Within consciousness, reality is always distorted. We don't see things as they are, and that is delusion. We take our distorted ideas and desires and move toward the world, trying to find reality. We try to see reality with our minds, abilities, willpower, and effort. But all of this is delusion. To practice is to awaken to the self that is part of all things. But the subject of practice is not the personal self, but all beings. In other words, it is not we who engage in our practice, but rather Buddha who carries out Buddha's practice through us. It is not a matter of individual actions or experiences based on individual willpower or effort. Zazen is not a practice that makes beings into Buddhas. Zazen itself is Buddha's practice. Zazen enables us to see clearly that we are part of the world, part of nature, part of Buddha. We actualize the self that is connected with all dharmas. We don't personally become a Buddha, but rather we awaken to the reality that from the beginning we are living Buddha's life. There is no separate individual who practices Zazen and becomes enlightened. Enlightenment is not the self awakening to reality, but Zazen awakening to Zazen, Dharma awakening to Dharma, Buddha awakening to Buddha. This is the meaning of practice and enlightenment are one. I also want to say that you should please sit comfortably in whatever posture or eye position you find suitable. And if that is the Zazen posture, then lovely. And if not, lovely. Part two, no matter how hard we practice, our motivation for practice is always still based in some amount of self-centeredness. Yet the act of truly seeing our self-centeredness is itself Buddha. To awaken to the reality of our delusion is itself Buddha. To realize delusion is to be a Buddha. Awakening to the incompleteness and self-centeredness of our practice and returning to our path is the meaning of repentance, of atonement. In Zazen, we let go of our narrow, limited karmic selves and actualize the total interpenetrating whole that is absolute reality. We cannot ever see this absolute reality as an object of our discriminating minds, but we are naturally a part of it. We cannot be an observer of absolute reality because we ourselves are part of its total movement. And yet, though we are deluded, we are still living within absolute universal reality. And even though we are living within this absolute universal reality, we are still deluded as individual karmic selves. This is the reality of human life. In Zazen, it is not the I, the limited karmic self, that awakens to reality. Rather, it is universal reality that is itself practicing and manifesting reality. Great realization actualizes great realization through our practice. Our Zazen is not a method of correcting the distortion of our fabricated conceptual maps. Instead, we let go of all maps and sit down on the ground of reality. Letting go is at once the complete rejection of any mental formations arising in our limited karmic mind, and also the acceptance of all formations as mere secretions of the mind. We let thoughts come up and we let them go away. We neither negate nor affirm anything in Zazen. Zazen goes beyond and yet includes both complete rejection and complete acceptance of thought. When we sit in the upright posture, keeping the eyes open, breathing through the nose, and letting go of mental formations, reality manifests itself. This is Genjo Koan. the actualization of reality. At this time, only manifesting reality exists, and manifesting reality includes our delusions. Practicing in this way helps us understand that our maps of the world are biased and incomplete, and this understanding allows us to be flexible. Practicing in this way broadens our view, and this broadened view allows us to be better at working in harmony with others. In Zazen, there is no way we can judge ourselves because we cannot step outside our mental formations into objectivity. True reality is beyond such judgments. There is no way to conceive of being a Buddha or of being enlightened. So, in Zazen, without trying to be a Buddha or become enlightened, keep settling more and more deeply into immeasurable reality. Zazen itself is this immeasurable reality. So, I really love this piece. And this, so as I said, this is Shohaku Okumura's commentary on Dogen. And when most of us read Dogen, we are immediately struck by how incomprehensible he is. You know, how he just seems to be all over the place and clearly far more smart and, you know, plugged into some kind of spiritual reality than like we are. And, you know, Dogen is kind of just like reading Hegel or something like that. But I think that that actually, and I think as this piece makes really clear, this practice of Shikantaza, Dogen's practice of Shikantaza, is about is a very kind of encompassing, inclusive, receiving practice that is actually it is both really directly about our lives exactly as they are, our minds exactly as they are, and also there's a lot of liberation to be found in the fact that it is not at all about you. It's not about the contents of your mind. It's not about getting the right contents of your mind. So I wanted to start by just inviting folks to respond to pieces in this that resonated with you or didn't, or seemed particularly inscrutable or contradicting to something in your experience. So I wanted to open that up, and then I wanted to maybe take a little guided tour through this.
I like the part. It's not new, but it's good to have it sort of whacked at me about how sitting here is not about fixing the small self. It's not about doing something to get something.
That's enormously important, and that's the first line. Delusion is not some fixed thing within our minds that if eliminated would be replaced with enlightenment. And it's not the small self that we're this is not the small self as opposed to like big self. This is the self that it's not about making a better version of us. It's about and part of the thing that I think is so generous about this piece is that it delusion is not a category, is not actually the word has a negative meaning, you know, for us kind of in English, but here it's really neutral to describe anything that's arising, and when you encounter delusion in that way, then even enlightenment or kensho or any experience that you're having, or peace, or anything, is another form of delusion. It's a mental arising, and it's not about that. It's this. And recognizing that all we ever see is the kind of stuff that we see, right? And Zazen is not about which stuff you're seeing or not seeing. Thank you. Other responses or reactions or resonances?
Yeah, Well, it feels very sort of psychologically modern and astute in some ways, the way it's summarized here, the whole part about nobody being able to see reality, never being able to get outside of your own consciousness, your own, all the things that you look through. There's something about that rings very true, that nobody can ever really get outside of their own, all the various things that you look through as you're perceiving reality. So that feels very liberating in a way to say, well, of course, delusion is inevitable. Nobody could ever not be deluded as long as we're continuing to look through that small self. What I don't get then is how we get out of that. The whole last part of it, I don't remember the phrase, the delusion, something becoming delusion, or...
So,
but what's the turn of phrase where it keeps...
So there's no...
delusion, actualizing delusion, is that what it is? Enlightenment actualizing?
In Zazen, there's no way we can judge ourselves because we cannot step outside our mental formations into objectivity.
Right.
True reality is beyond such judgments, or not contained in such judgments, or not containable in such judgments. There is no way to conceive of being a Buddha or of being enlightened. So in Zazen, without trying to be a Buddha or become enlightened, keep settling more and more deeply into immeasurable reality. And Zazen itself is this immeasurable reality. But it's important to not make settling into this immeasurable reality as some kind of then special thing, which is now what we're really trying to do, as opposed to see through our delusions. The act of just putting the butt on the cushion is settling into the immeasurable reality. The act of seeing delusions, seeing mind contents arising as mind contents, is settling into that.
Very hard to not exactly try hard to do anything. You know, like sort of sitting there very intensely, not trying to achieve anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I get the sense of this big effort, but never any sense about what, you know, as you try to figure out what the effort's being directed at, it sort of dissolves in front of you.
And, yes, in a way. One of the things that Dogen says elsewhere is that Zazen is the Dharma gate of ease and joy. Which
Dharma gate than the one I go through.
So you think. So we all think. But also there's a way that confusion is the Dharma gate of ease and joy. Seeing this moment as it is, confused or clear, effortful or not effortful, is the Dharma gate of ease and joy. And it's important, and part of what comes of having, of delusion being this huge, vast, super category that, you know, includes all of what arises for you, is that you don't have to get free of it, but that one thing is not a failed version of the other one. So confusion is not a failed version of clarity, just as blue is not a failed version of red. It's blue. And so you are right to pick up on there is a paradox with effort, but I think that especially as we move into practicing with Shikantaza, after many years of practicing with the breath and of bringing that effort, part of what we're doing in Shikantaza is now kind of deconstructing the scaffolding of effort we've built around our practice. And then the scaffolding that you have when building a building, and then you take it away. And so there is a point in practice where we can start to recognize that striving, that effort, that doing, that trying as just another mental formation. It's another kind of thing that arises in our mind. And recognizing striving as striving without buying into the story of striving is is recognizing striving as the neutral delusion that it is, which it, in the sense of just this thing that happens in a kind of karmically limited self with our conditioning and all of our stuff that arises. And so for me, in my practice of Shikhan Thasa, part of what it is, part of what I am doing is noticing how often I fall into doing. And often that gets expressed for me in my body. And I'm often leaning forward, you know, trying to just do this Shikhan Thasa. And there isn't actually a Shikhan Thasa that you can do. But when you are really able to entrust yourself, when you deeply trust the reality that the only things that appear in your mind are the things that appear in your mind, which is to say, more delusion, then it becomes much easier to just kind of relaxedly, you know, just desist from the striving when you see striving arising. And then, because we have our karmic conditioning in our minds, and we have years and years and lifetimes of as a species using our minds in this way, then it happens again, and that's actually not a problem. And so this edge of doing and non-doing is an important thing to notice. Everybody in this room has been practicing for a really long time, and you have really made great use of your effort thus far. And now I think that the challenge, part of the invitation here, is to step off that cliff of familiarity, step off that cliff of comforting yourself with knowing that you're doing something and you're doing it right. Or if you can't know you're doing it right, then you can have the next best thing, which is to be completely certain you're doing it wrong. Right? Which is often where we go when we can't be sure we're doing it right. But both of those are just more games. And so to really step into the unknown, step into that place where we're not grabbed. This is stepping off the, that's right. And that is the Dharma gate of ease and joy, even if what you are experiencing is striving and angst.
I mean, I'm having this reaction to what you're saying. Is that I keep hearing it's faith, you know, that what's there is there. That's fine.
And faith is one word for it. And faith is one word in Zen for it. This is when we chant affirming faith in mind. This is the faith we're talking about. And this kind of faith has nothing to do with what you do or don't believe, or what you do and don't experience as a result of what you do or don't believe. And so it is faith. And if that speaks to you, or if that is a mnemonic for you to remember this, then to use that imagery of faith. But the faith, just like the effort, is actually irrelevant to itself. And one kind of metaphor for this is that thusness, right? Everything as it is, this vast, universal, absolute, interpenetrating reality of which we and our delusions are inextricably part of, and completely always inseparable from, that is like gravity. And you can have faith in gravity and trust that if you drop an apple, it's going to fall down. Trust that if you put your foot in front of the other, you're going to be sticking onto the earth. But it actually doesn't matter whether you have faith in gravity or not. Gravity is going to function as gravity. And yet, an awareness of gravity kind of enables you to, something, I'm sure. But, yeah.
You know, I listened to Dio for a while, as you do. I think there's a difference in my practice, I think. It takes effort to pay attention, to stay alert, to see the breath. I mean, I can sit here and doze, and that's not practice, you know, at least the way I was taught, that there's a difference, and that's not putting out much effort. It's not sitting up alertly, it's not being actively sitting if I go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It may be thusness, but it's not, I don't think it's practice. So I think that for me anyway, my understanding is, and please correct it if it needs correcting, that I need to make an effort. It's only after several days of session, perhaps, that I can be alert and attentive without sort of being conscious of making an effort.
Mm-hmm. So,
does that make sense?
It makes. I completely understand what you're saying. And you are right to pick up on that this doesn't sound like the zazen or the shikantaza of vigorous effort. I have heard people in the vigorous effort shikantaza school say that shikantaza should be so intense that you should be breaking out in a sweat there on your cushion. Or I've heard it described as your attention should be as if you are carrying a bucket of water filled up to the brim on your head through a crowded marketplace, and there is a soldier with a sword in front of you and behind of you, and if you spill even a single drop, the soldier will slash your head off. Then that's shikantaza. And there are teachers who teach that way. And I began my practice in that. And I haven't found that all that useful. I haven't found so there is this special effort that we can be capable of, that it is part of what is within the sphere of human possibility. And it's true that practice on the fourth day of session is not like practice not on session. But it is not the case that way that things feel on the fourth day of session is real practice or good practice, and the stuff that we do in our everyday life is just the lamest version that we can come up with until we get to the session the next time. And this is another version of looking at blue and thinking it's a failed red. There's a New Yorker cartoon. You know, I couldn't get through a Dharma talk without mentioning a New Yorker cartoon. But there's a New Yorker cartoon in which a guy is pointing his finger at a cat and saying, "Bad dog!" A cat is a very bad dog. And it's our expectation that can't be a dog. That's the problem. So, when we talk about I can sit here and doze. Dozing is actually not the enemy, but also there is a reality, and this is why we do not start with. We don't start with shikantaza. In this school, too, we start with breath counting, and then we start with following the breath, and then we start with being the breath, and we do a lot of work on the breath. But then we do this something else. So dozing is sleep is also a delusion. Sleep is also another mental formation. And you can actually see sleep thoughts, it's like a thought arising. And you can actually this duality between sleeping and not sleeping is another story we tell. One of the most famous modern Zen teachers, Shoto Harada Roshi, who is a teacher in Japan, who many American Zen teachers, many American Roshis go to Japan to study with him. He came a number of years ago to the Cambridge Buddhist Association and was going to give a talk. And during the periods of Zazen before his talk, he was doing this. The traditional Zazen bob and weave. I asked someone about that, and they said that Roshi doesn't differentiate between asleep and wake. But if you look more closely at that experience that you're having, there's. We can only do what we can do when we can do it. We can't do more than we can do before we can do it. And so when we notice that our mind has drifted, right, then this looking at the past and thinking, oh, I've been dozing for the last 5 minutes, that's actually just another delusion. That's another story. And so there's only this moment, and this moment may contain the looking, but there isn't any of that. There isn't that past. There isn't that last 5 minutes. There doesn't exist any moment other than this one. And the way to engage this one is always, 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 always the same. And and this is the kind of indestructible refuge of Dharma practice. If our Dharma practice is about special states of mind, special contents of mind, special mental formations, or in the language of this piece, special delusions that we sometimes can have, then under rarefied and effortful circumstances, then what about the other times? What about when we can't be on Sashina? What about when we are on Sashina and we're in the middle of a hell realm? But this practice of thusness, this practice of settling into immeasurable reality, and this practice of not about the state of your body, mind, consciousness, wakefulness. This practice is always available to you. It's available to you in black depression. It's available to you in excruciating physical or emotional pain. It's available to you in grief on your deathbed. And it doesn't require anything special. And that is, for me, much more useful. And in my experience, much more liberating.
So, along the same lines, maybe. Something I was hearing in the selection that might or might not be there, that has to do with this course we can't have the experience of ultimate reality. I was reacting, thinking that sometimes when we start practice, and then later on too, we think we should be attaining some special state. And no, we won't see ultimate reality, but it'll be a little bit closer. It'll be some, lovely or horrible, but something really intense. And a lot of practices encourage that, and including some Buddhist practices, including some Mahayana Buddhist practices. You can read people in Tricycle magazine saying, if you're not having these special states, this is what they do over in wherever, and you're just not getting that. And that has not been the teaching here.
That's right.
And listening to this, I'm thinking, yeah, the special moment, really is that moment that he talks about coming back into awareness. It's the floor. It's the clock ticking.
Mm-hmm. That's also the experience of this immeasurable reality. It's not that we can't experience it. It's that it actually isn't as special as we imagine it is. Here is this ultimate experience of reality. And this is what koans point us to over and over and over again. And this is what... you're exactly right.
So then the encouragement is then not to be disappointed and say, oh, it's just the floor, it's just the clock.
Or to receive that disappointment in the same spirit. Like, disappointed, not disappointed, it's also not about that. So disappointed is not a barrier, it's not a problem, it's not a special class of thing. It's just more mental formation, more neutral delusion. And so... And you are right also about different sects, traditions, teachers, even within Buddhism, and that's true. There are many ways, and so the most intense of those kinds of things is jhana practice. And jhanas are this practice from the Theravadin tradition where, you know, there are these ten, the seven, you know, states that you go to sequentially, and you get into this state by doing this, and then from there you do this other thing, and then those are the seven mundane states, and then you get into the four super mundane states, and there's an enormous body of literature around them. And at their best, then, what you do at the end of getting into the beyond the form and the formless, and beyond the bliss body is, so part of what you realize through doing that is the impermanence and unsatisfactoriness of each of those states. And then in jhana practice, those things get deconstructed at the very end of the path.
Is it an attempt to recreate what Buddha went through, Gautama went through? Like, because he did the same thing and then set it aside.
Right. In a way, yeah. Mm-hmm. But not mm-hmm. exactly. But definitely in that family of things. And so at their best, these kinds of practices then deconstruct themselves at the end. And what we do in the Zen influenced by Dogen is kind of and in the koan tradition of Hakuin that we also study, is deconstruct as we go. We start with the deconstruction.
We don't even get to have the fun before we take it away.
That's right. And in a way, so if we imagine the spiritual practice as a path, whether it's from here to there or from here to here in a circle. There are different traditions that go start out by going left and then take a right and then go over here and then come over here, or start by going this way and that way and that way. But they end up through a different series of turns in the same place. And the jhana paths, the special experience paths, go one way. Ours does not go that way. And both are actually fine and effective. And both have their own traps and their own specific shadows and pitfalls and dangers. So our part of our job as Mahayana Buddhists practicing, you know, right speech is to not make people who practice differently wrong, but also to recognize that not every teacher and every practice is talking about the same thing at the same time. And so there's kind of a simplifying syncretistic trend in Western Dharma to say, see, we're all really saying the same thing, but there's actually traditions of really refined, skillful means. So they are all pointing at the same thing, and you get masters in these traditions together, and they will by and large agree on the nature of Dharma and the reality and where they end up. But short of that, it can seem very different. And so my encouragement to all of you is to Trust your own experience. Verify what's useful to you, what is liberating to you, and and where the language and the pitfalls and the style kind of resonates with you, and to align yourself with that. And if you are really wanting to take advantage of the teaching in the tradition of Boundless Way Zen, to be able to recognize that there are other ways of practicing, and this is not what we're doing. And if you want to pursue one of those other ways of practicing, do, please, and enjoy it, and mazel tov. But the tools that we use in this school, and the tools that the teachers in this school are trained in wielding to advantage, are these shikantaza of settling into a measurable reality, this shikantaza of desisting from effort, of not making effort into this special category, of not making kensho into this special category, and of using koans to continually blow up and destroy our little treasured clinging posts and the things that we really want to hold aside as a special category of thing, or a special category of being, like ourselves, who clearly, unlike everybody else, lacks Buddha nature, or whatever it is that our story is. Traditionally, the shadow and pitfall of Zen is clinging to emptiness, is preferring emptiness to form preferring special meditative states to ordinary mind. And in a way, I think that the school of Zen that is most kind of closely kind of aligned with our style of teaching and pointing is called the ordinary mind school. Part of the shadow of Boundless Way Zen, is a subtle way where it kind of creeps back in the back door that actually we're doing it right, and everybody else is getting it wrong because we see how everybody is doing it right, but so we're right and they're wrong. So there's that too, that other way that we can elevate self and put down other. And then there are other ones like clinging too tightly to our tools, clinging too tightly to the koan curriculum as such, to retreat practice as such.
Time for one more.
Sure, one more question, then we'll wrap.
There's it says to about greatly realizing delusion in that piece, and I was wondering what that means or looks like.
Right now it seems to look like wondering what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So greatly realizing delusion is actually not different from realizing delusion. And realizing delusion is actually not different from just manifesting the ordinary human life. So and in one sense it is greatly realizing delusion is realizing this vast supercategory of delusion that includes everything. And then, you know, in faith, resting effortlessly in that supercategory of neutral delusion, and that being, you know, completely effortlessly immovable from that place of space of faith, because you know that there is nothing other than delusion that will ever manifest itself in your mind. And there's great liberation there. Or not. Did you want to say something? All right. So, thank you guys. And I want to point you to this book, Realizing Genjo Koan, which is going to be out in a couple of months.